When you tried to teach the scientific method, what is it that you actually convey? And what do the students actually learn? Hi, this is David Alan Greer for The Errant Hashtag. Today's episode is entitled Scientific Conversation. April is the cool month, as my inbox starts filling with final drafts of capstone papers, the project that stands between my students and their graduation. I'd like to believe that the work will go quickly, but I know too much about the process of trying to teach the methods of scientific research. For a year, I've worked with these students, as I have with their predecessors, to help them understand the nature of the scientific method. Most understand the letter of the scientific process, but few grasp the spirit. At best, I can get them to take their first steps in the scientific community and marvel at how those steps are changing the practice of science. Science is the process of building hypotheses, of gathering data, testing ideas. But it is not an activity that happens in isolation. It does not exist outside of the scientific community. Though my students are all involved in that chaotic world of social media, they see absolutely no reason to engage an existing community that generally shuns tweets and Instagrams. For them, the tool of the internet exists for the purpose of innovation, to break the bonds of old social structures and build something new. As they are pushed into the scientific community, my students tend to borrow rather than create. They tend to produce papers that look like scientific papers, or at least the way they believe that scientific papers should look. They usually borrow templates from professional societies, such as the Association for the Advancement of Artificial Intelligence, and decorate their papers with color graphs and mathematical derivations. While such papers may look impressive, they are really written to demonstrate the effort that the students had taken, rather than to argue for the truth of their ideas. All of these students had undertaken hard problems. They assembled data sets that would have been unfathomable a few years ago. Rather than do a small experiment with a few of their friends or measure a simple technology system, they collected data sets with tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of points. They pulled information from social media, from government repositories, from supercomputer sites. Their vision matched their data as they asked questions about emergency response in East Asia, images of health in the English-speaking world, global technical education. To process this data, they again borrowed from others. Every project was filled with APIs and public domain Python programs. Some papers employed crowdsourcing to process data. All stretched themselves to use complicated analytical tools that would have been well beyond the grasp of the students of the 1990s or even of the 2000s. They learned by analogy and have tremendous courage. They reached for the highest peg and grabbed it, firm in the belief that the concepts of generalized, penalized maximum likelihood models were exactly the same as those of linear regression with least squares. Borrowed words, borrowed graphs, borrowed methods do not a scientific paper make. Yet they provide a common vocabulary that allows me to connect these papers to the scientific community. I start with the references, removing the citations that are included solely for decoration and replace them with papers that actually provide foundation for the work. I move then to the analysis, providing units to parameters, noting signs of poor fit, finding examples of unexplained patterns. At last, I move to the conclusions, which are always problematic. Most authors confuse data and theory. They believe that they have an interesting result when they see a change in their data. They don't stop to ask what the number tells them about the way people learn, or the way information moves through a population, or the way two algorithms interact. Science is not about numbers, I tell them. It's about the knowledge that the numbers only suggest, the knowledge that only emerges in conversation with a community. I know enough about this process to understand that these students will conduct their scientific conversations with tool and data and theories that are alien from the tools and data and theory that I have used. just as I rejected the concepts of my mentor's generation, my students are rejecting some of mine. Soon enough, these students will be involved in real conversations about a science in a language that I only vaguely understand, and they'll be doing it in the community of their own, a community that they know, and a community that they have helped build. This is David Alan Greer for the Errant Hashtag. Take care.